Welcome to You Influence Podcast, where you will hear everything you need to learn how to be a man or woman of influence for the better in your personal and professional life, in business, at work, and in your social life. Becoming a person of positive influence has an invaluable effect in ways we cannot imagine, but can only be felt in personal fulfillment. All right. Welcome to another episode of You Influence with Rafael Mavi. And today I do have a very special guest. She is a young guest who is hustling, who is influencing, not just in her profession, but from what I understand also in her personal life with decisions she's made, she's making, and what she's actually intending to do in the near future. Her name is Indalija Alford. She is from Atlanta. I actually connected with her over, was it Instagram, right? Yeah, Instagram. And so before we get into the podcast, the episode, I do want to ask you to share, I mean, with me and with the audience, of course, how you got such a cool name, Indalija.
Yeah, so Indalija is a pretty cool name. It's actually a funny story. So my parents were drug dealers. So Indo is a type of weed, and you probably heard the song, Rolling Down the Street, Smoking Indo.
Yeah, of course. That's what it was about?
Yeah, so my father told their drug dealers they wanted to name me at first just Indo, and then my mom decided that that was a little too much, so she added on the Elijah part, and she says it means beautiful, but really my name is originated from weed, so that's a funny story.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. And actually, the full name, I found it very unique, Indalija. Yeah. I've never met anybody with a name like that.
Yeah, so it's awesome, though, because for every single username, I can always just use my first name and that's it, whereas other people have to, like, add numbers or something behind there. Mine can always just be my first name.
Absolutely. That's awesome. Very unique. Okay, so one of the reasons why I wanted to bring you on the show is that I'm aware as far as what type of audience has been following me and the type of audience that's growing as well. And generally speaking, the largest number is between the ages of 25, 23, up to about 35. Okay, that's the biggest demographic. And understanding where you are, right, in your profession and the decision that you've made to get to where you are today, I believe that is gonna help the listeners make decisions in their life. And the reason why I chose the name for this podcast, You Influence, is because, number one, we all get influenced.
Right.
You know, 2 minutes ago, you just shared with us how your name originated. So that was an influence of a drug type, right? And then it came out to be something beautiful and unique. So everything that happens in our life, I don't believe in accidents. Everything happens for a reason. But also, things happen because of some sort of influence, whether it's an individual influence, whether it's a circumstance, whether it's an event, right? And with that said, I don't think that circumstances that influence us make us. When people blame circumstances around them, I truly believe that circumstances only, they open up the actual person. They reveal the character or the personality. And what the person does at that moment with that situation is about 80 to 90% of that outcome after the circumstance happens.
Right.
So from speaking, I don't know if you know this, I don't know if you've done, what kind of homework you've done on me, but you know, the last company I've had with over 70 employees and I had 2 other partners there. As a matter of fact, 90% of all of our employees were millennials. So when I started hearing all these talks about millennials this, millennials that, I'm like, yeah, there's certain truth to it, but it's not this particular generation of millennials. It was the same exact way when I was in my early 20s as well. Because number one, you're excited you got a job. Number two, you don't know what the hell you want to do in 20 years. So you're just going with the flow because you're happy that you sort of made it. You broke away, quote unquote, from the family status quo, and you think you're doing good, right? But what's the actual definition of doing good? there's no limit, because there's always great after great. You have exceptional, right? And all of that, all of those steps of progress include influence, because without it, we're nothing. So everything that it has influenced us since birth helps us make decisions, whether they're bad or good. And then you get to a point of maturity. And by maturity, I don't mean age. I'm talking about level of thinking, the type of thinking, right? The quality of your thinking. You get to a level of maturity when you start realizing that you want to be the influencer. And I'm not talking about Instagram or Facebook influencer. I'm talking about real life, whether you do it through digital platform or you do it in person, that's just a means of distribution. But I'm talking about when you make a conscious decision to influence people and events and circumstances, situations around you. So you take control and you say to yourself, I'm no longer a victim. I'm going to be a victor by having the power to influence others. Okay, so I do want you to share with us your story, who you were growing up, you know, 10, 11, 12, 15 years old, 17 years old, you know, what level of thinking did you grow up with, you know, limiting beliefs, if there were any, maybe there weren't, you know, and what decisions did you start making consciously without having to rely on other sources of influence?
Right, so... as you've already mentioned, like, I live here in Atlanta. I was born in Pennsylvania. Both of my parents were drug dealers. My father went to prison when I was one. My mom went to prison when I was two. And, you know, when they were both in prison, I lived with my mom's ex-boyfriend's mom. And it kind of created some limiting beliefs early in the young age that was planted in my subconscious mind. And I kind of grew up very poor. When my mom got out of prison, you know, she wanted to do everything she could to make sure that she never went back. So she never went back to selling drugs. She, you know, worked all these minimum wage jobs. And it created the limiting belief that it's hard to make money legally for me as a child. Because the only time my mom was quote unquote successful is when she was selling drugs, doing illegal activities.
So this is the limiting belief that you develop without even anybody telling you that. This is from observation?
This is literally, I didn't figure out this was my limiting belief until at a Tony Robbins event, and I had this huge breakthrough, and I was like, wow, because I realized I was holding myself back because that was my limiting belief. So, you know, from a young age, you're programmed with all your subconscious mind. Everything that happens to you and everything that you experience, it kind of goes into your programming. So I was literally believing that it was quote unquote hard to make money when it's really not, it's easy. So I had to reprogram my subconscious mind in order to believe that it's easy to make money and that there's abundance around me and abundance flows through me. So now I'm actually reaping those fruits of being able to reprogram my subconscious mind. The way I was able to do that was my high school, when I was in high school, probably the end of my junior year, beginning of my senior year, I got introduced to network marketing, which a lot of people are familiar with. And within network marketing organizations, they promote personal development. So my first mentor, his name is Gabe Pinto, we're still very close today. He put a book in my hand called Think and Grow Rich. And it changed my life forever. I loved it. I did super well within the business. Within the first month, I hit the next level, which I think only 80-something% of people who join the company even get to the next level. And then within the second month, I hit the next level after that, and I was killing it in high school.
Did you mean 80% of the company do not make it to the next level or actually make it to the next level?
80% of the people who join the network marketing organization that I was in never make it.
Never make it. Okay, and you did. Okay.
Within the first 30 days. And I had a lot of momentum going. It was great. Everybody was signing up. And it got to the point where I was, you know, seeing all the success, but everybody that I signed up wasn't. So I internalized that as me being a bad leader. And I kind of, you know, quit the business, fell off from personal development, started going to school, doing that traditional route. Even though in high school I was making more money than I was at my jobs because I had had a bunch of jobs. I don't know why, but I just completely abandoned it. I felt bad about it. And I started just going to school, working a part-time $10 an hour job, doing that whole route. And it wasn't until my junior year of college, 2 years ago, where I realized, wow, I should be way further ahead than where I am. Like I remember how in high school when I was actively reading and actively in personal development, I felt like I was more in my operating in my purpose versus just doing random things and partying. And, you know, I didn't really feel like I was helping anybody. I didn't feel like I was adding value. So that's when I started picking back up some of the principles and the old books that I used to read. I started rereading them. I joined the book club. And ever since then, it changed my life. Like I had, at the time I was working a job that I hated. After I started reading these books, you know, entrepreneurship opportunity fell into my lap and I was able to quit my job in a couple months. And I've been an entrepreneur ever since.
So when you say, you know, these opportunities fell into your lap, again, I told you before, I don't believe in accidents. So something must have happened. Did you put yourself in proximity for those situations to come about? Did you go to events? Did you network with the right people? What did you actually do for that, you know, to quote unquote fall into your lap?
Yeah, so I believe that your level of income is never going to exceed your level of personal development. So through myself, I was able to attract new people in my life who, you know, were like-minded and doing things. And my first entrepreneurship opportunity came because I was, you know, friends with my friend Austin, and he had noticed that I was like growing and being a better person. He was like, "Hey, I want to introduce you to my friend Haji. You know, I think you guys could collaborate and do business together." And we were doing a social media marketing company, and it really was just the universe aligning itself. It's kind of like everything. I truly believe that everything that happens to you, you kind of create your own reality and you attract it into your life. And I feel like for me, as growing and developing as a person, I was able to attract those opportunities to me. Whereas before, when I was just like partying, living in the day to day, not really like being future oriented or not being really intentional about what I'm doing or where I'm going or who I'm affecting or who I'm helping, you know, it kind of just, you know, made it easier for it to attract me fraud.
Huh. Wow. Okay. So it was you being exposed to personal development through a direct sales company, network marketing company, right? And then life happened. You put all that stuff on a shelf, so to speak, right? And you went about your business. You had other jobs, right? A job that you hated. And then you came to a point, you're like, you know, something is not aligned here. There's something more, right? It's like a gut feeling.
Yeah.
And then you ended up going back to personal development and reading books. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's true. Like if you're not growing, you're dying. I feel like as humans, we crave the desire to grow and be better people. So when we're not doing that, when we're not growing, we're dying. And I was just at a place where I was so unhappy. I was so depressed. And it just kind of clicked to me, you know, I need to work on myself. I need to be a better end Elijah. I need to show up so that I can make sure that I'm there for my family. I need to do all these things in order to be great, because I knew there was more to life than just waking up, going to class, going to my $10 an hour job, turning up on the weekends. Like I just knew there was so much more to life than just that average.
How did you know it? Like was somebody in your ear constantly? Were you watching videos? What was it? Like, was it somebody that you were looking up to, but didn't know you're actually looking up to them? You know, what is it that told you or gave you that gut feeling to say, you know what, this is not for me?
I don't think there was a person in my ear. I think it was more like I was just completely unhappy. Like I was broke. I was struggling paycheck to paycheck, you know, living life, just going through emotions. You know, I wasn't happy with the guy I was dating. I wasn't happy with just who I was as a person. I wasn't happy with my friends. I felt like they were all negative. And it just, you know, you reach a point in your life where everything just, it just compounds into more and more negativity and you just start to become depressed. So I just started to kind of like shut down emotionally. And I think what did it for me is my little sisters are the reason why I do everything that I do. Like they're my why. And I think my little sister had asked me for $100 for something. And it kind of broke my heart that I didn't have it because she always looks to me whenever she needs anything. So the fact that I wasn't able to provide that at that time, it kind of like made me almost hate myself to the point where it's like, I should be doing better. Like it was just instilled inside of me. And I feel like it was because I had those previous foundation principles of what I needed to do in order to be successful from when I was in high school.
Wow. And how many sisters do you have?
So I have two little sisters on my mom's side.
Okay.
They're the only like family that I'm necessarily close with, but total I have 17 brothers and sisters.
17
yeah.
total.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. All right.
I have a strong relationship with my two little sisters because, you know, my mom, as a single mom, it was just me, her, and those two growing up.
Wow. And are they also in Atlanta?
Yes.
They live. Okay. I'm sorry?
They live in Marietta, Georgia.
Got it. Marietta. Okay. That's awesome. Actually, I used to have a cousin that lived there.
Okay.
And I believe they moved back to New York.
Okay.
So they made a move from New York to Marietta, and then they came back to New York a few years later.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was a while ago. This is like probably going back to late 90s, I would say.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I actually visited Atlanta once, and that was 1995.
That's the year I was born. You need to come back. A lot
of that's the year. Yeah, that was a very interesting experience.
Yeah.
Very different from New York. My cousin actually lived there at the time with his wife and three kids.
Okay.
So it was good. The food was great. You know, the lifestyle was very good. I didn't know much to compare just because at that point I was only in the country for 4 years. Because
yeah.
We immigrated here in 91. From another country. So in 95, when we went to Atlanta, for me, it was like a different world. It's like, I'm like, this is not America, because the only America I knew was like New York.
Right.
And funny enough, I mean, I got to do a whole episode on this as far as setting expectations, talking about locations. When we just came to New York and we're driving, we got picked up at the airport and we're driving to the apartment that we were going to stay in, right? It was cold. It was like in December of 91. New York was nasty, dirty. And for me, I'm like, this is not New York. We're not in America. Because yes. in my mind, the picture that I had of U.S. was sunny, palm trees, clean streets.
Florida.
Because all the – yeah, exactly. So the movies that I've been watching over there, they were all shot either in Hollywood or in Miami.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, after watching movies like, you know, Scarface, Vice, the Stallone movies, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And here we are in this dark, cold, dirty New York driving.
Yeah.
And I'm like, holy shit. I'm like, this is not it. This cannot be it. I left my friends. We left everything to come to this place.
Yeah.
You know? So, but over the course of the next 4 years, obviously, it grew on me. You know, I went from being 12 to 16. And we get to Atlanta, I'm like, wow, this is nice.
Yeah.
You know, this is very different. So that was my only experience with Atlanta. I stayed there for about a week. It was very nice. Loved it.
It's grown a lot. You should definitely come back. It's grown a lot. A lot of movies are actually being shot here now.
Because, really?
Yeah, like a lot of them.
Why do you think that is?
It's just because it's a growing industry. Atlanta has a lot of entertainment. People that live here, and there's a lot of rappers and movie stars. A lot of shows are filmed here. I was watching a Netflix movie the other day, and I was like, oh my god, that's my high school. Like, they're filming movies at my high school. Like, it's a lot of growth happening.
Okay. Are you guys capitalizing on that growth?
Oh, definitely, for sure.
Definitely. Okay, yeah, I definitely want to talk about that as far as what you're doing right now with your company.
Yeah.
And how are you guys capitalizing on that market space?
Okay, so
right.
What we're able to is I'm in real estate. So the more people that move here, the more people need places to live. So because I work with a real estate investment firm, it's great for us that Atlanta has so much growth that we're kind of like saturated right now to where people are coming in. And, you know, that helps us because we're working with real estate investors. So we primarily wholesale to other investors, properties to fix and flip, and we also do fix and flips as well. So all of that growth on both ends of the business helps us, you know, in order to be successful, in order for us to generate revenue, we need people to live here. So we're going in. Atlanta has grown so much that all the neighborhoods are being completely gentrified. There's, we have a property over in this neighborhood called Grant Park, whereas 2 years ago, if you were to go in Grant Park, it was very scary. You wouldn't want to go by yourself. You're like, oh, this is rough. If you go over there now, it's beautiful. You see people just, you know, rolling down the street with their dogs and their strollers and just running outside, and it's just a completely different environment. Whereas you used to be able to buy houses over there for like $30,000. We're about to list one right now for $500,000, where it's like, that's crazy to go from $30,000 to $500,000.
So when was it listed for $30,000? I mean, what time frame are we talking about?
This was literally 3 years ago when you would be able to pick up houses over there, and it was very scary. So within the last 3 to 5 years, Atlanta has completely changed. The hood isn't the hood anymore in Atlanta.
Yeah, we actually have areas like that in New York City as well, particularly in Brooklyn. A lot of areas where people didn't want to go to work, you know, they didn't want to, you know, rent or buy there. But all of a sudden right now, you can't even touch anything unless you have $1 million.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah.
The hood isn't the hood anymore.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Are you educating your consumers as far as, you know, why they should invest there and how they would get their money back? Are you guys doing anything as far as workshops, classes, education centers? How are you treating your clients?
So my client, I consider to be my investors. I don't consider our clients to be the end buyers because we primarily wholesale, so we primarily work with investors. So with every property that I get, I'll sit down with my client and I'll say, hey, here's why it's a good deal. Here's why it's not. Here's what's happening in the area. Here are the developments that are going on. And I'll give them my honest feedback on if I think it's a good deal or if I don't think it's a good deal. And based on that, let them make their own decision. We don't necessarily have any workshops per se for our investors, but with every client, I sit down and I make sure that I do the research to be informed on how they're going to make money and where they're going to see their return and if it's a good area, if there's growth or if it's slowing down and those such things. Like, what are the days on the market for the homes that are going in the area? That kind of stuff.
So what type of investors are you working with mostly? Long-term investors or the ones that are just coming in for a fix and flip?
Primarily just fix and flip investors.
Okay. So no rentals?
We do rentals, but that's not our main client. Our ideal typical target market is going to be the person who's looking to do that fix and flip and get a return.
So that means you work with the banks a lot. You get their inventory first.
Yes. We have a large, well, all of our properties are off market. So that's kind of one of the benefits to working with my company versus working with a realtor, because for one, there's not as much competition because nobody else knows about the deals unless you are on my buyer's list. And for two, you don't have to pay any realtor commissions when you're purchasing the houses.
Got it. Okay. That's interesting. So I know you got to where you got to after, you know, going back to personal development and making that conscious decision to move forward. You went to college?
Yeah, I'm actually still okay. In school, finishing up. I graduated in May.
Okay, what are you majoring in? What's your formal education?
Marketing.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Marketing. Okay. And you mentioned earlier that you ran a social media agency or consulting. Yeah.
So previously, before I got into real estate, my first entrepreneurial venture was social media marketing. I had a business partner. It didn't work out between us, and eventually I parted ways with that company. But it was a good experience, and I learned a lot, and I learned a ton. And some of those principles I was able to reapply to when I got on board with my current company.
Okay. Now, did that decision have anything to do with your major in marketing? Is that something you're passionate about? Why did you choose marketing?
No. So I wouldn't say, oh my God, I'm so passionate about marketing. I really only went to school because it was free. So I was blessed enough to have a very strong relationship with the principal of my high school. And she knew like my family was pretty poor and things like that. So she set me up with her brother's law firm in order for me to receive a $25,000 scholarship with their law firm, which was a huge blessing.
Wow.
On top of that, I have hope because my grades were always good. On top of that, I get, you know, the federal Pell Grant because my family was a low income. So for me, I didn't really know what I wanted to do when I first got into school, but I was like, you know, I don't know what I want to do. I'm just going to go ahead and do it because it's paid for. So it was just really a blessing. It just kind of fell into my lap. And it allowed me to, you know, kind of figure out what I want to do and just not, you know, go with whatever.
Go with the flow, right.
Kind of gave me like something to do for now. And through being in school, I realized that, okay, I don't want to do anything with marketing. Well, I guess you use marketing principles with everything you do.
Of course.
I realized that I don't want to work a traditional job from being in school.
Got it. But it's still a mission to finish it and get that degree.
Yeah. Because, you know, whenever you start something, you have to finish it.
You have to finish it. Awesome. Love that attitude. Now, you mentioned that you're, and there's a reason why I'm asking these questions, because, you know, you have the average 19, 20, 21-year-old listening to this, and they're like, well, my grades always suck because I didn't have a supporting environment in the house because, you know, I came from a broken home. So all these reasons, right, I call them excuses, other people call them reasons, it's not always the case. Going back to the beginning of this episode, when I explained about circumstances and when you create your own circumstances.
Right.
So you mentioned that you had, you know, good grades, which helped, right, with that law firm and getting that grant. Did you have a supporting household environment for you to, you know, excel in school?
Right. I personally believe nobody's going to remember you for how good your excuse was. So if you're creating all these excuses, it's up to you. For me personally, coming from a home where both of my parents were drug dealers and we grew up pretty poor, when my mom got out of prison, she was only able to work minimum wage jobs. And she was gone all the time. She was never home. I had a lot of freedom because she was trying to do what she could to make sure that she was there for me and, you know, doing legal stuff and doing what she could. And I kind of took it upon myself to where I saw how I grew up and I saw how there was a lack and I knew that there was more and I wanted more. So I made the decision for myself not to go down that same path to where I'm the first person in my family to who's going to graduate from college, who's going to complete college, because I decided, yeah, my situation sucks. Yeah, I'm kind of poor, you know, yeah, it's not always the best, but there's always going to be those situations. There's always people who are going to have it 30 times worse than me. There's going to be people who have it 30 times better than me. But it doesn't matter if you come from a family that was very loving and supporting, or it doesn't matter if you come from a family that treated, you know, that wasn't as loving and supporting. All that matters is what decisions you decide to make and how you can turn something that may have been negative into a positive. However, I was blessed enough that my mom, you know, she always told me how much she loved me. So she was supportive in that factor. Like she showed me love. And, you know, I always respect her because when she got out of prison, she made sure that she never left me again. She made sure she never went back. So she did everything she could. She worked as hard as she could. She did it all by herself. So I always have so much love and respect. But not everybody's going to have that same mindset. Somebody else could have been like, well, you know, we grew up poor, so that's the excuse, but it's not. You know, it's really just up to you to make that decision to be the best version of you, pretty much.
Absolutely. One of my early mentors, he would always say, is that you listen to these different speakers and different quote-unquote gurus, like, and everybody's got a story, right? And you may be sitting there listening to, I mean, at that time, we didn't have podcasts, but you know, it's like you're at a seminar, you're at a workshop, whatever, you're listening to this person or you're reading a book and it's just another story. And it's like, okay, you know, everybody's got a story. everyone. He's like, you're not going to connect with the audience with your past. Like, people want to know what you did with that story. What happened afterwards? So he's like, if you got a story to tell, make sure you have the follow through of what happened. Because otherwise, if it's just a story, it becomes a so what factor. Everybody's got a freaking story. Everyone. Some worse than others.
Yeah, nobody's going to remember your excuse.
Yeah, absolutely. It's exactly that. Okay. It's interesting. You know, I got to comment on this because the thought that I grew up with, like if somebody said a drug dealer, for me, it was like, you know, Scarface type of living. It's like you don't say I came from a poor home if my parents were drug dealers, because if somebody says drug dealer, I'm thinking like they're bathing in, you know, $100 bills.
So I would say, so when I was younger and both of my parents were drug dealers, obviously I was very small at the time, between the ages 1 and 2 before they were both in prison, my mom, you know, we were well off as drug dealers. We weren't Scarface rich, but, you know, she was doing well, you know, she wasn't worried. She had money coming in every single day. She told me she could make $2,500 on a Friday night, and if it wasn't for me, she would have been a drug dealer forever, pretty much. But with that life comes some very ugly, ugly things that the media doesn't always portray.
Right.
So when you're selling drugs that are harmful drugs, you're killing people, and that's not pretty. Or there's so much violence involved that comes with it, and it's not always glamorous as people try to make it seem. And worst comes to worst, you go to prison and then you have nothing. You lose everything. When both of my parents went to prison, they lost everything. They had nothing to show for it. So you did all of this, and yeah, it was good momentarily, but it's not something that's substantial long term for most people.
Right. And how old were you when she came out?
My mom got out of prison when I was 6.
You were 6. Okay. Wow, that's inspiring, you know, and understanding that is very inspiring. So what does influence look like for you now? What does that mean to you when you hear the word influence?
With everything, I believe that you're influenced by everything that comes around you, but it's your internal perspective that allows you to take in which influences you're going to be acceptable to you, if that makes sense. So, you know, there's going to be positive influences, there's going to be negative influences, and it's up to you to have that discernment to filter out which ones you're going to internalize and take in. And I feel like it's important also that when I think about influence, I think it's important to influence others. And the way you do that is through helping people. I feel like we're put here on this earth to help as many people as you can. And the way that you create value is through helping people. It could be something so small as, hey, I see you don't have a coat, here's a coat, or something big where you take on somebody and mentor them. But I feel like as a person, as a human being, we're all here to help other people. And in turn, that influences. You never know, a small gesture could change somebody's life.
Okay. Now, being where you are right now and being in the industry that you're in now, right? Do you have, let's say, a 5, a 10, a 20 year goal already set in place?
Yeah, I do. So right now I'm in real estate and I love real estate, but I'm not necessarily like a real estate holic. My real ultimate goal is to open up in 10 years an animal hospital. So I'm using real estate as the vehicle to get to my goal, to where I can open up an animal hospital and not have to worry about whether or not it's profitable, like whether or not the doctors are getting paid, because I love them so much. And I feel like you need to be able to make money and figure out how to make money in order for you to do things that you're truly passionate about. It's a tool to utilize to accomplish a bigger goal, pretty much. So that's
so,
I love animals. I have a pit bull. She's literally like my daughter to me. Like, I love her so much. and that's my 10-year goal.
Okay. So that kind of goes against what, you know, a lot of the gurus saying, like, you know, got to follow your passion, you know, find a way to monetize your passion. And here you are sitting there and telling me that you may have your passion and it's great to have that. But if, you know, you got to do today what's necessary, right, in order to fund that passion.
Yeah, because it's like the way I look at it is if I go to vet school and become a veterinarian, veterinarians don't make that much money. So how am I going to open up an animal hospital where I'm able to pay all these different veterinarians and able to fund their staff and pay for all the latest treatments and pay for all the medicines that are necessary for these animals if I don't have the money to do it? So, you know, I feel like everybody's like, oh, you need to follow your passion. But sometimes you just need to do what you got to do. You got to work. You got to grind so that later on in life you can do what you want.
Hey, man, if I had a gong over here, I would just like ring it right now because that's gold right there. I absolutely subscribe to that, you know.
The process isn't always going to be pretty, like, but it's a process and you need to do it. You need to undergo the process in order to, you know, live a fulfilling life.
See, if I knew, if I had the mentality that I have right now, which is like that, right, 10, 15 years ago, oh, man, we all have those, like, those moments, right? Like, only if I knew back then. You know why? And I'll tell you why. Because when you are on a path of personal growth and development and you're looking to find that oomph that you know you've been missing in your traditional job and through traditional education, you start paying attention to people that, how should I say this? They come off as gurus and they may have all the finances. I'm not saying they don't, right? But you're seduced into believing that you need to follow your passion, you know, excuse me. So now that I'm older, I realize that, okay, when you hear some advice, you have to consider not just the source, but where they are and their bar of life that they set it in,
right?
So I remember during the interview with Steve Jobs and Bill Gates were sitting together and he was talking about following passion, right? And with other people like Gary Vaynerchuk, you know, life is too short to do shit you hate. That's what he says. I get it. I'm not saying he's wrong. Like, why would you do something you hate? But what if you're doing something you may not love, but you don't necessarily hate, and you get really good at it, and you make a ton of money, and then go fund your passion?
Yeah. That's
because what I'm seeing, a lot of these rich people, right, including people like, you know, Bill Gates, and including people like, what's his name, Warren Buffett and Oprah, right, they're all philanthropical all of a sudden. They're giving money away for charities, for things that they're really passionate about. But they had to make their money first.
Right.
And they had to make their money in something they were great at.
Right.
Not necessarily something they were passionate about. And people, in my opinion, often mistake what you're skillful at, what you're passionate at.
Right.
Those two are not the same.
Right.
Right. And I'm even going to take my own story, for example, where I started doing public speaking only because I had no choice and I was already in a network marketing company. This was back in 2005, right? And my mentor said, Raph, if you don't start speaking, you're going to lose your business. And I already had anywhere between 30 and 60 people coming to every single meeting every week in my organization. And I didn't know how to speak. I didn't want to speak. I want to sit in the back of the room. Even though I was the host of the event, I would sit in the back of the room because that's how much I hated public appearance,
right?
But because I was put in that position and he sort of made me do it, and I'm glad he did, for the next 2 years, I went out in front of a room, made a complete ass out of myself. It would start a meeting with 40, 50 people. By the time I was done, there were 13 people left in the room. And it wasn't because they were not interested in the information, because I sucked,
yeah,
you know? And I would bring my wife. She would sit in the back of the room. I asked her, I'm like, take notes. I need you to criticize me, you know, like critique me. Because I cannot improve if I don't know where I'm screwing up.
Right.
And I did that for 2 years. It was difficult and something I hated to do. It wasn't something that I was passionate about. It wasn't something that I didn't love. This was something I could not stand.
Right.
Okay. Right. I mean, the stuff that I went through physically before the event, it's hysterical now, but it was like, I was ready to cry. It was nerve wracking. But here's what happened. 2 years down the road, I found myself speaking in front of 1,500 people.
No problem.
Well, I mean, I was still, yeah, you know, anxious. Don't get me wrong. But I wasn't as bad and I wasn't as nervous.
Right.
So through repetition, I developed that skill. And today people are like, oh, I can't believe you're an introvert natural. I'm like, yeah, I am. And still, they still don't believe me. Yeah. Right. I do classes with this and that. Like, it took me forever to get the phone and flip the camera onto my face to do a video because I didn't like that process.
Yeah.
But eventually when you start doing it, you get good at it and you start getting the attention, right, in a positive way, you're actually influencing in a positive way. You're like, what better currency can you ask for when you're making a difference in somebody's life through your input?
Yeah.
And that skill, I still today cannot call it a passion. Even though, let's say I'm better today than I was, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
But the passion is completely separate. I'm glad you brought that up, you know, that your goal in 10 years is actually building that hospital for animals.
Yeah.
Right?
So I was listening to Will Smith the other day, and he was talking about the Marines. And they have this saying, everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to go to hell. You have to go through that hell sometimes in order to get to that heaven. You have to do the shit that nobody else wants to do. You have to get out there. You have to grind. You know, nobody likes doing cold calls. I don't think, even to this day, I don't think it's fun calling up people who I don't know. Because, you know, a lot of times they're like, how did you get my number? You don't know me, and just hang up. Like, it happens. But you have to do that shit in order to get to where you want to be. So I just feel like as long as you're, you know, putting in those success habits and as long as you're doing the things that you're supposed to do long term, then you can focus on things that you're passionate about, and passion will come. You know, and even if you don't know what you're passionate about, do something that you can monetize now, because money's a tool. You know, money doesn't guarantee happiness. And that's 100% fact. You know, money doesn't mean that you're successful, but not having money is guaranteed to have unhappiness. You know, you're going to be stressing about bills. You're going to be stressing about helping out your family. You're going to be stressing about this, that, and the third.
So 100%.
Have money and be able to, you know, do the things that I need to do, because it gives you more options to tool. Like, you shouldn't love money, but you should love the things that money's able to do for you.
So absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I would say, you know, money's not, like you said, right, it's not guaranteed to bring you happiness. But once you know what can make you happy, money will help you get there much faster.
Right.
You know, it is a tool. It's a vehicle. But you need to know where you're going. That's the problem. And most people don't know. That's why you see a lot of, you know, depressed rich people. They don't know what they're striving for. They don't know what makes them fulfilled. You know, and people confuse happiness with fulfillment. You could find yourself happy in that particular moment. That could be a drug-induced happiness. That could be after, you know, sex. After that could be after a party. That could be after witnessing your child, you know, getting married. That's like temporary happiness, but that's not fulfillment. What's fulfillment? And that's why it's so important for a person to know exactly where they're going, to know what makes them fulfilled.
Right.
And I'm not going to lie, most people don't know.
Yeah.
And what I need to say, what I want to say to them is, it's okay not to know.
Yeah.
As long as you're aware that this is something that's a priority, you need to be on the quest to find out what that fulfillment means. How does that look like for you? And if it takes you a year, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years to find out what that fulfillment is, it's okay, because I'd rather leave this life knowing that I made the effort to find what it is than go through life living somebody else's story just because it was somebody else that told me that was close to me and I lived their life, not my own. So that's very important. So you have that 10-year goal, right? Okay, awesome. So how does that convert into influence? You have your hospital, you're servicing, you know, all these animals, you're doing something good, you're passionate about animals, clearly, right? But how does that translate into influence?
I personally feel like if I'm able to accomplish what I'm able to accomplish being from where I'm from, you know, the typical person in my position, you know, the neighborhood that I'm from, like, girls don't make it to be successful. They end up, you know, pregnant or in jail. They end up stripping or selling drugs. So if I can do it, I feel like that's a platform to let other little girls who look like me know, oh, if she can do it, I can do it too. And it influences other young women to be able to step up to the plate and be like, I know that my situation sucks right now. I know that, you know, the neighborhood I'm in isn't a good neighborhood. I know that I have all these negative things that are, you know, coming against me. But I can overcome all of that, and if she can do it, I can do it, because I'm not that smart. So trust me, if I can do it, anyone can do it. And I feel like that's how me being able to accomplish the things that I'm able to accomplish will influence others.
So, okay, that's great. How are you planning to do that? Are you, do you have like a goal to write a book or a podcast or using some social media? How are you looking to, you know, inspire all these young women to get out of that stinking thinking mindset?
I personally haven't thought that far into it, so I'm not really sure how I'm going to do it. I feel like once I get to where exactly where I need to be able to say this is where I came from and this is everything that I've done, then the universe will present it to me. It'll all work itself out. I truly believe in like the law of attraction and things like that, and just me focusing right now on, you know, my business, focusing on real estate, focusing on getting to the place where I do feel like, okay, you know, I've hit milestones that I needed to hit, then I feel like it'll just kind of like how entrepreneurship kind of fell into my lap, or being with the company I am with right now fell into my lap. I feel like that.
Don't call it that. It didn't fall into your lap. Believe that. No way. You took steps. You feel like that. But again, by hearing your story, you took steps. You made conscious, purposeful decisions. You didn't know what's going to happen. You didn't know who you're going to meet. You didn't know what opportunity is going to present itself. But you actually took steps towards it.
Right? I don't know how I'm going to impact people, but I just know that it's going to happen.
Exactly, because that's your intention. Yeah. Well, personally, for what it's worth, I think you should start now. Right. You know, you have a pretty sizable following on Instagram. You know, you're documenting your process. You're documenting your presence in the gym as a trainer as well, right? So you're doing all of these things. You're getting engagement, and I believe I found your profile through Damon John's page as well. I think it was Damon John when they shouted out like my review of their program. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that's how I found your page, either that or Grant Cardone, one of them. Okay, but you should definitely, in my opinion, I think you should start now. And also, if you could reverse engineer that. Right? If that's the goal for 10 years, then you could start working backwards, and somebody who's coming up now and she's confused or he's confused and they're, you know, kind of young, they don't know what to do. Maybe their story is holding them back, which is, you know, that's the case most of the time. Now they're going to be looking at this, you know, young lady who is doing all these things, but then they learn your story. You would inspire me more if I'm, let's say you're 25 and I'm 19. Whether I'm a guy or a girl doesn't matter, right? I could relate to you better because of that age space. When you're 35 and you come out and say, well, my come up was like that, I can say, well, that was a different time.
Right?
You don't know how hard it is for us now. That was like 2 decades ago, right? People do that all the time. I hear it. You know, it's like I'm trying to tell somebody who's 20 years old right now, because they're following and they're DMing me, So I'm giving them a certain advice. They're like, oh, you don't get it, dude. It's like this. It's like that. Like, okay, no, you don't get it. Because I was 20 at some point as well.
Right.
Lost. Going through the motions, right? Making money, but going through the motions without real, you know, clear purpose, right? Technology has changed.
Yeah.
But the human behavior, it doesn't, it hasn't changed for thousands of years.
Right.
What makes you think in the last 20 it has?
Right.
But people, they find these excuses. So I think you should definitely start documenting and providing value already.
Okay.
It's gonna be at least triple and quadruple the value in 10 years.
Right.
Okay. Awesome. What advice would you give to somebody who is in their early 20s to late 20s right now, trying to figure things out? Maybe they're even 30. They're in a career path. They're stuck. Maybe because they got into it through osmosis,
right,
through parents' advice, through cultural advice or cultural expectation, out of a guilt trip. You know, so what advice would you give somebody who is looking for that next best thing and they know they're capable of more, but they're stuck?
I truly believe 100% in the law of attraction. So the only way that your life is going to be better is if you become better. You know, whether that's you working on yourself in the gym, whether that's you reading books, whether that's you taking the time to journal and control your thoughts. It's not until you make that conscious decision that I'm going to go through the ugly process of dealing with my demons, dealing with my limiting beliefs, overcoming obstacles, you know, taking an inventory of the resources that you have and, you know, what you can use to be better, or who do you know that can put you in a better position? You know, it isn't until you sit down and you start having those meetings and conferences with yourself, with your own mind, that
with yourself, that's good.
Yeah, with yourself, you have meetings with yourself, have conferences with yourself, and that'll put you in a position to get you on the right path. It'll come to you. You'll attract it into your life. You'll attract the right opportunity. You'll attract the right people, but first you have to do the ugly work of, what are my limiting beliefs? How am I holding myself back? What have I done? You know, you have to take full responsibility for your life and everything that you've done to put yourself in that position, and just start working on yourself. You know, I truly believe, like, by going to the gym and by reading books by other people who are successful, that's the two biggest things right there that can just dramatically change your life. And for me, it has. And that's something that I tell everybody, you know, you want a better life, meet with yourself, go to the gym, work out, do a little walk. You know, obviously you're not going to be able to squat 200 pounds your first time, but you got to start somewhere. And most people never want to take that first step to start. You know, obviously people don't like reading, you know, you're not going to want to be able to sit down for 2 hours of time and read, but just read 10 pages a day. Just start there. And then it becomes easier. It gets better, you get better, and then you keep getting better and better and better at it until it's just like instinct.
That's awesome. Is that how you started reading, or you enjoyed reading from the beginning?
I don't necessarily believe that anybody enjoys reading. Even now, I'm like, I don't know. I kind of just slowly started doing it. Like, okay, let me read 10 pages, okay, let me read 20 pages, let me read a chapter, to the point where I can read a whole book in one sitting now, because it's like it's training. You get better and get better and get better. So
what are the top three books that you would recommend to people? Your favorite, the most impactful, value-packed?
Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I would say, is one of the most impactful books that I have read. Oh, there's so many. The Four Agreements.
Oh, yeah.
The Four Agreements changed my life and changed my perspective on dealing with other people. And I love that book so much. And third favorite book, I would say Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon.
That's awesome. I read all three of them and I loved them. Think and Grow Rich, actually, I'm sorry, Rich Dad Poor Dad was the first book I have read cover to cover at the age of 24. And I've never read books before.
It's a life changer.
Yeah, and definitely changed my paradigm, the way I look at things. That book actually caused me to leave my corporate career.
Right.
Because it was like an awakening moment. I think I probably did it too soon with no strategy in place, no plan. I thought I'd, made my first deal in real estate on the side while I was hustling. And I'm like, okay, cool, I'll make it, I'll succeed. And I left corporate just like cold. Yeah. But that book definitely transformed my, mentality for sure.
Right.
Okay. Have you read How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Awesome.
That book, the biggest thing from that book that I think helped me is remembering people's names.
Yes, for sure. Especially if you're in sales, you need that. You need that skill.
Remembering people's names. That book taught me how to do that.
All right. Awesome. So where can people find you and follow you? On what social media platforms are you on? And what's the name?
So you can follow me on Instagram at Indolysia, IndoLysia. And on LinkedIn, Indolysia Alford, ALFOR.
Okay. So Instagram and Facebook. I'm sorry, Instagram and LinkedIn.
Yep.
Okay. So you're not on Facebook?
Not on Facebook.
No Twitter?
No Twitter.
Okay. So just Instagram and LinkedIn. Okay. Awesome. And all right. That's great. Listen, I really enjoyed this. I think there's a lot of value, especially for people that are, younger and trying to find that next oomph, to strive for. And I hope you guys got a lot of value out of this episode, took notes, and we're going to list the name, of course, in the description of the episode as well, so you could find Indolysia on Instagram and LinkedIn. Okay?
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Thank you for being a guest here.
All right. Have a great day.
Take care, you too. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. I appreciate each and every one of you for tuning in. And if you haven't subscribed to this podcast already, please show us your support by subscribing and leaving a positive review to help us advance on the chart. You can always connect with me on social media by searching for Rafael Mavi at Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or LinkedIn. If you have any questions or just want to drop a line, the fastest way to get a hold of me is through my Instagram. Until next time.